I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Managing Cyber Risk, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by East Centire, the authority in managed detection and response. Joining me today is Mark Sangster, VP Industry Security Strategy at East Centire. And also joining us today is Tim Evans, SVP, co-founder, and chief of strategy at Adlumin, as well as retired colonel with the NSA's attack team. Mark, Tim, welcome. So great to have you both with us today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And it's great to be back, Hillary.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark, in keeping with the tradition, want to start off, as always, by giving us an intro for this episode?
Sure. So today we're going to talk about learning from the adversary and exploiting, you know, and how they go about exploiting vulnerabilities. And you know, I don't know how you can kind of talk about, you know, the know thy enemy without referencing Sun Tzu, of course. And, you know, if you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you also suffer a defeat. And one of the best ways we can learn is from learning from our adversary and studying them, because from those types of attacks, we can reverse engineer what they do to build the defenses. And I've said this for a while, while they're a bit of a snooze fest and they help you if you can't sleep at night, you know, reading corrective action plans that the OCR, the Office of Civil Rights, publishes is a good way at looking at these major breaches that have occurred that you've read about in the headlines, and then kind of figuring out by inference what the companies were or were not doing. You know, if they say, for example, well, you need to use multi-factor authentication or segmentation or whatever it is, we can kind of assume that they weren't. And that's why, of course, the OCR is mandating that they do that. And, you know, really, this is about breaking some of the myths, right? The big one, you're not a target. Understanding that, yes, you are a target, that a lot of these attacks are unsophisticated and obvious, right? The streaming service email that says your credit card's been rejected and click on the convenient link to update your payment methodology. And that, you know, if a big group, a ransomware gang, a state-sponsored actor, nation state, whoever it is, comes a calling, that, you know, there's no real way for any business to stop them. And, you know, a follow-on to that is the notion of, you know, there were no signs, right? We had no idea until this thing blew up and, you know, now we were shut down. And, you know, when we were brought to our knees, here's this ransom message that says, you know, pay us seven figures or else. And, you know, there's a good quote I just stumbled across. It's an oldie, but it's not what you don't know that will hurt you. It's what you know that ain't so. And that's Mark Twain. And, you know, it still holds true today in the cyber world, right? Is that we live under these misconceptions. We don't truly understand how our adversaries work. We don't understand the vulnerabilities they're looking for and the way they go about exploiting them. And, you know, Tim and I have done some work together already in this capacity, and I could think of no one better than to talk about, here's what it looks like when you go on the offensive. Here's what, you know, you do when you stumble across an opening that you can use to exploit your adversary.
Yep, absolutely, Mark. You're dead on there for sure. So you know, Hillary, as you said earlier, you know, I came from the National Security Agency. I spent 6 years, a little bit over 6 years there as the commander of an offensive hacking squadron. That means, you know, we do as a nation state, like every nation state, go out and attack our adversaries, our foreign adversaries network. But typically it's not what you think of. We're not trying to bring down infrastructure typically, although that happens sometimes. But, you know, we're out there trying to gain foreign intelligence. We're there to steal files that help us in intelligence in the Department of Defense, in the, you know, in the White House, in every place else. And you know, so we do that on a regular basis. So we definitely know what that looks like for sure.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Both, thank you, Mark, for giving us a great overview of the episode. And it sounds like, Tim, you are certainly the perfect guest for this topic. And I know you have that incredible background and experience, so I'm really looking forward to learning more about the perspective of the adversary and looking at it from that way, because I think that's not something that everyone is, certainly not something that everyone's talking about. And Mark, quickly, you know, we know that ransomware attacks are rampant and impacting businesses and organizations across all industries, all sizes, big, small. Everyone is, you know, equal opportunity for these cyber criminals. And there's certainly no sign of them slowing down. And speaking of that, we at Cybersecurity Ventures predict that ransomware damage costs will exceed $265 billion by 2031, with attacks on businesses, consumers, devices, what have you, occurring every 2 seconds. So as I mentioned quickly, want to help set the scene for us a little bit more here. I mean, I think people are pretty well aware, but perhaps there's a little more to dissect of what's going on.
Yeah, you know, when you get to the point where late night comedians like John Oliver are actually running, you know, 20-something minute segments on the history of ransomware and why it's so prevalent, that tells you just how bad it's gotten, right? How far into society and the economy it's pervaded that, you know, it's now, you know, fodder for jokes and comedy at midnight. And this kind of thing is, you know, it's been building for years, I think. And we kind of live in a bit of a cold war, right? So, you know, as Tim was talking about, like going on the offensive with your enemy, right? We're both playing a game and we're going to keep it. I shouldn't say game. We're both playing because the stakes are high. And the reality is, you know, all parties kind of want to keep it just below the boil, because if it boils over, you know, it becomes a hot war and you know, there's some dire consequences of that. So it's kind of the 1950s, right? It's post-World War II, Cold War with the Soviet Union and the wall going up in Berlin. And, you know, again, it's the, we're going to poke and prod each other, but, you know, we're hopefully not going to put missiles in the air because we know that that doesn't go well for, you know, for humankind on the planet. And ransomware we're seeing has just become, you know, it's become the sort of the weapon of choice with criminals. And it's gone from opportunistic and transactional types of attacks. You know, it doesn't matter who I get, whether I get granny or a healthcare facility or a law firm, and I'm going to charge you some opportunistic fee, right? $500 in cryptocurrency. Now it's used for denial of service, for massive operational outages. And we saw that with attacks like Colonial Pipeline, for example. But that's being fueled by an ecosystem of experts, right? So big ransomware gangs that develop these technologies and then sell them to other gangs, or they do revenue sharing models. So you're a smaller gang, you can't afford to develop those things. You don't have the in-house sort of skills to do that. But you know what? You can borrow it from them, and tell you what, they're going to take the majority of the cut, but you're going to prove your street cred by getting bloodied a little bit, you know, and that moves you up in the criminal world. And there's also all sorts of expertise, you know, that they can leverage. So people who are good at figuring out how to create phishing lures that tend to get clicked on by specific people in certain industries, right? Like if I want to go after a healthcare institution, I know how to write a fake malpractice suit that looks like it comes from a reputable law firm, so that that doctor or nurse or whoever it is going to click on it. And of course, that PDF, which is a legit stolen court record, you know, is used to then deploy malware into their environment, and they're off to the races. And we saw, just like Colonial Pipeline, we've also, I see the corollary in the technology world, which is pipelines, utilities, water treatment, you know, heat and power, and water in your home are something you can't live without. And it's kind of the same thing in a business world. You have to have email and network access, right? Internet access and file sharing and storage and so on. So the attacks on SolarWinds and Microsoft infrastructure, and recently Kaseya being used, a remote administrative tool being used to deploy ransomware, these kind of things are just going to increase because they're a utility, right? By definition, you have to have infrastructure. So I can't avoid the risk by not using it. They preserve the investment they put in it, in their development of an exploit, right? Because only one company at a time knows it exists and has the opportunity to detect and stop it. And if they don't, then that ultimately gives them access to downstream victims, right? Namely, that vendor's client base. And that's the kind of things that we're seeing. And I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon.
It absolutely isn't, Hillary, without a doubt. So one thing I might add to that is, you know, the FBI has been studying the ransomware attackers and groups for quite some time. Department of Homeland Security, obviously, their CISA, the CISA organization is really out there looking for indicators of compromise that they can give to people to look for indicators that an attack might be coming. But the FBI has studied this and they've said, look, these guys are a business organization. They have a business model for how they do ransomware. And, you know, it starts obviously with penetration or breach of a network. And they're looking around. They see when things are going to get backed up. Where do they back up? Can they delete the backup right before they institute the ransomware attack? These are all things that the penetration team's thinking about. Then the second team that comes in is kind of the malware team, and they're gonna figure out the best places to plant this malware so that they can lock everything up really, really quick. And then the third thing that these organizations are doing is I understand that they are starting And Mark, and I know you and I haven't talked about this, but they're starting to actually do background information checks on the system administrators and the CIOs with the hope that they can come up with enough extortion material to have a 1-2-3 punch. One, pay me the ransom or I won't unlock your network. Two, if you don't pay me the ransom and you don't, I won't unlock your network, I'm still going to release the information that I stole from you. And third, not only am I going to do that, but I'm going to release extortion information I have on the system administrator. So it's really a business model that ransomware gangs are instituting out there. And it's crazy. And by the way, it doesn't, people think I don't make enough money to be ransomware. My company's not big enough. This is completely false, as Mark will tell you. I know a particular disposal company, a trash disposal company that has been hit twice with ransomware in the last year. And that's just crazy.
Man, well, Tony Soprano might have something to say about that. You know what, though? That last point that you brought up, Tim, is something I have been kind of waiting for, right? The other criminal shoe to drop, which is that notion of making it personal. So as you see, let's say, well, Treasury coming out saying, don't pay ransoms, but by the way, they're tax deductible. Or, you know, maybe we're going to limit that. Or we're discouraging you from doing it, making it sort of, you know, more, there's more red tape around it. Your insurer, you know, AXA saying, you know, again, maybe, you know, we're not going to negotiate with terrorists. To make it personal starts to circumvent that. So even if a company has a policy, you get to the point where it's not insured. You're right. If you've got all that personal information that you can expose on a key individual in the company, you're putting that individual pressure on them to say, you know, forget it. I'm going to break policy here, right? I don't care that we've said we don't do this or that it's not insured. I'm still taking $2 million out of our coffers and I'm paying this because I don't want people selling where my kids go to school, right? Or something else, my bank information or, you know, worse, if we've got something, you know, skeleton in the closet, we don't want to come out, even if it's Halloween, right? And that kind of figures, that's going to be the next thing, right? We're just going back to good old 1970s extortion, right? I think it's the, you know, the model isn't broken, so they're just reapplying it in a new way.
Absolutely.
And so, Tim, I think you did a great job of kind of, you know, sharing what you've witnessed as far as the evolution of ransomware and what bad actors and cyber criminals are looking for to infiltrate organizations. And I know you gave a couple of examples of vulnerabilities that they're looking for, and the background check of the CIO and things of that nature are just really fascinating. But are there any vulnerabilities in particular that criminals look for within an organization that perhaps they're kind of standard, you know, like across the board, if you have X, Y, and Z? I know it's not that simple, but, you know, I was just thinking about that and thinking that could be something you would be able to weigh in on.
It may actually be that simple, Hillary. you know, one of the things I can go on my experience, and my experience as the commander of a hacking squadron was, you know, in 6 years, there was a handful of times that we did not use compromised accounts where, you know, there was a spear phishing activity done against the system administrator. You know, they just, at the time, they always clicked. Now, today, I hope things are changing, and Mark can probably tell us more about that, but I'm guessing not. I think people still click. Once they have an account, a compromised account, they can get into the network very, very easily. And unless the organization has the right tools, they're in the network as a legitimate user. How are you going to find them?
Right.
Yeah, that's true, right? That's exactly what we see. It starts with compromised creds, and yeah, people are clicking on them. And those lures are a lot more sophisticated, personalized, and context relevant than, you know, my streaming service example. and, you know, and once they're in, you're right, they use remote administrative tools. They're coming in through your own defensive measures like an SD-WAN or a VPN. They create new users. In fact, I just dealt with a healthcare institution where I had to bite my tongue and not say I told you so because we were in there talking to them about deploying some services. And I gave them an example, this exact example. You know, they get in, they create new accounts. Those accounts are used to deploy various forms of malware. So more credential harvesting tools, collection of data, et cetera, keystroke loggers, all that kind of stuff before we even get to ransomware. And, you know, and he said one of the big signs is those new users. And in fact, about a week later, one of their junior people discovered a bunch of users being created, contacted HR over a weekend saying, you know, hey, I noticed this, you know, but are these new people? I'm not sure what they have to do with, right? You couldn't correlate them in some way. Mm. It's a holiday weekend. The head of HR did not respond, flipped it to the IT manager, and the IT manager just kind of said, look, you know, I'm with my family. I'm at some event. Let's, you know, we'll deal with it on Monday. Sunday night detonated. They paid 1.5 mil in ransom, right?
Yep. So, that's a great point, Mark, because these are things that, you know, there's no silver bullet to know, did somebody create new accounts? But you have to have a tool that lets you know when a new account's created. When I compromised and breached a network at the, you know, nation state level, every single time without fail, I created accounts. They looked like the accounts that were on the network. So if it was in, you know, if they were all Arabic, then, you know, we created Arabic names or whatever or Chinese or Russian or whatever. Ultimately, they're going to make it look like your account. So that means you have to know every time an account's created, and you have to be able to verify that we created that account, which is really hard for large organizations, without a doubt.
Yeah, I used to use an analogy of light, like visible light, you know, and so the stuff we can, our eyeballs can see. But then there's infrared that we can't see, but we can feel as heat, right? And there's ultraviolet, which we can't see, but lie on a beach, you get a sunburn, and so on, you know, x-rays and, you know, microwaves and all that kind of stuff. And my point of it is, there's things you can see and actually, you know, overtly detect. But then there's the things you kind of have to infer their presence, even though you can't, there's no sensor picking them up. And that's the kind of stuff you're talking about, right? It's all these different logging elements that kind of tell you, you know what, if I put all these pieces together, there is something going on. And I think it's that kind of sophistication that, or I wouldn't even call it sophistication. It's that, those techniques that a lot of companies don't have, they're not prepared, they don't have, or they don't have the resources, or frankly, they're just not sure where to look. You know, so unfortunately, these pieces of evidence pop up in front of them. They just don't know what they mean, and because of that, you know, they don't see them as a warning sign, and they take no defensive action.
Yep, that's exactly correct. Yep.
And Tim, another question for you, just to add on to that great back and forth that you and Mark just had. I mean, we hear that organizations should be looking at their security posture from the perspective of the adversary, but I guess how should they be doing that? I mean, you know, is it just different like tabletop exercises or red team? You know, what should they be doing?
That's a great question. So, and it's a question that's fairly easy to answer, at least externally. You know, one of the things that every attacking organization uses is a tool like Shodan has. Shodan.io is the tool. And what it does is it gives you an attacker's perspective of all of your IP addresses that you own. It literally lets you look from the outside in at your network to look for, you know, known CVEs or vulnerabilities that are sitting on devices that are internet facing on your network. That's typically, we hear, somebody left this open, right? For even AWS or some other cloud-based service, they left a door open. Well, you know, you have to have something that lets you know, are all my doors closed? So Shodan is one of those tools that, you know, you can, we actually use it in our platform at Adlumin, but it's a platform that's available to everybody because it gives you the attacker's perspective of your network from the internet facing side. It's a beautiful tool, but that's a great question. And yeah, we have to think about it from two perspectives. You know, inside my network, I have all of these things that I am protecting. And outside my network, you know, I'm already projecting what I look like to other people. So you got to check both perspectives to make sure that you have the right tools inside and that you haven't misconfigured something from the outside.
Excellent. Great point. And Mark, speaking of making sure you have the right tools, I know you kind of covered at the beginning of our conversation some different types of ransomware, but we often hear a lot about file encryption. But of course, there are other types. And I guess, again, from the perspective of the criminal, what types of information are they looking to steal?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, obviously there's lots of different, let's call them brand name flavors of ransomware. And in fact, you know, there's some, there's one that I use in talks where I talk about Lockerbit 2.0, and they actually have an affiliate program, right? They're trying to build out their channel and they have a two-pager marketing doc that I pulled down that's great, where, you know, it has speeds and feeds and, you know, how quickly they can encrypt and how tough it is to decrypt and the volume of data they've stolen. And they have it in comparison to all these other brands of ransomware. So again, to go back to Tim's point, it is a business. They have an economic model. They're the Miss Fortune 500. They run just like you do, right? They reduce operational costs. They increase their market share. They increase their revenue. That's profit by anyone's definition. But when it comes to the sort of how do they monetize this, you're right. There's the extortion and the ransom fees, right? I've shut you down. Pay me a ransom to get your business back. Now pay me a fee to keep it quiet. That's extortion or hush money. And the third element is the resell of the data. Because, of course, while they've been going around causing all that havoc in your environment, they've also been stealing information. And so they go after, you know, the obvious, right? The banking records, credentials, healthcare records, things that, you know, have a sort of a dot to dot, you know, point to point value on the market. But there's other things. And we saw this like with the Paradise Papers. That's still going on now. Like that breach happened, what, 2 years ago? And now we're just seeing that all of those tax shelter, tax haven information for those high net wealth celebrities and politicians, et cetera, are really coming to light again, just like the Panama Papers, you know, what, 5-6 years ago. So tax filings, pretty friggin' boring, right? And, you know, company registrations, pretty boring. Yet here you see this having such a significant ideological and, you know, and sort of economic and political impact. And there's non-public information, mergers and acquisition data, IP information. A few years back, there was two Ukrainian hackers who broke into law firms and stole marketing material on some pharma companies in New Jersey, and they use that to front run trades on the stock market, right? Simple, you know, simple model here. If you know the drug, if the FDA got, you know, gave approval to that COVID vaccine, their stock's going up on Monday. If it turns out that the FDA has, if they failed the testing, their stock is going to go down. So either way, when you know what's going to happen in the future, when you have that kind of cyber crystal ball, you can make money on public markets. And that's exactly, of course, what three individuals were charged by the SEC and the FBI with, right, is front running or insider trading. So they're really good at doing that stuff. And the other thing to remember is, even if they can't monetize it today, they save it for a rainy day. They're hoarders. So you know what? Maybe it doesn't mean anything to them. They've got information on a law firm they don't know what to do with, or they have information on a manufacturing in, you know, tires or aluminum or whatever it might be. Well, today that it doesn't have any value, or they don't know what the value is. But then what happens? I don't know. Trade war happens. There's a supply chain shortage in that commodity. And all of a sudden, its value is, you know, like a headline front page story. And now they know what it's worth. And now it's time to go back in and exploit whatever it was. So they either start selling that information or because they have a backdoor into that company, now it's time to go shut them down because they know, okay, aluminum is the hot commodity at the moment. Well, if I take out an aluminum manufacturer, I know they will have much more of a vested interest in recovering because now it's going to cost them 5, 10, 20x, right, in lost business. So they're going to go after that stuff. Everything effectively at some point has a dollar value.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, there's no doubt that they have a business model and they keep things. You're exactly right. So, you know, one thing that's scary, Hillary, is some of these attackers, I'm sure they're as sophisticated as nation states. And I think many of them are actually using some nation states infrastructure. Mm. You know, I think one thing that I've definitely read about in Russia is they keep all of the hackers on the hook by telling them that they can go and they can break into whoever they want. They'll be protected by the Russian government. But when it comes time for war, you're going to work for us. So in fact, while you're doing your ransomware attacks, maybe you keep some hooks in multiple pipelines in case we need that for a wartime scenario. That's the scary thing, is they can sometimes keep these hooks alive for years. And I would say, you know, it's not malware sitting in a network, but maybe they create a backdoor that somehow they can see, but nobody else can. And those are the types of scary things that happen.
Yeah. Sounds like lead generation.
Yeah, it's absolutely lead generation. You're exactly right.
And Tim, there's a myth floating around that ransomware is unstoppable. So is that true? Why or why not?
It's absolutely not true. You know, there's, can everybody that sees, you know, can you sit in front of your computer 24/7 and make sure you see the one factor that you should have seen? Probably not. But I think if with the right tools and automated detections, you know, the things that someone would look for a ransomware attack would be things like what we talked about already, compromised accounts. So you need that, your organization needs to have some type of tool that looks on the deep and dark web and open internet breaches for any compromised accounts within your organization. That's one tool, because what did Colonial Pipeline say was the only indicator they knew about? They knew one account was compromised. They had no idea how it was compromised, which means they didn't know about it until after the attack. They probably knew about it because they figured out exactly how that breach occurred, which account was used, how they came in after the breach occurred, et cetera. And, you know, so they were tracking that information. But so that's one thing, is compromised accounts. Another thing that, you know, you need to be aware of is, are your users doing unusual things on your network that they shouldn't be doing? Things like, and the reason I say that is because, remember, if they compromise an account, it's going to be easy to log into your network. Now they're in your network as a legitimate user. The only way to really discover them is to say, oh, hey, that user's doing something they never do. Like for a normal user on the network, even like me, I would never do a PowerShell. Mark might, I don't know, but you know, if it's an unusual activity, those are things that the attackers, they use PowerShell for a lot of things. And then finally, you know, you've just got to be able to see lateral movement in your network. If you can't see like that, you know, let's say user Robert has logged on to an account or to a system that they normally use. One day Robert comes in and he logs on to three or four other systems he's never logged into. That is the hugest sign that there is a breach in progress with Robert's account. But if you don't have the right tools to track Robert's behavior, and I would say that's user and entity behavior analytics, then you don't have the right tools to discover a breach.
And sometimes the tools are kind of non-technical, right? Picking up the phone and saying, hey, Robert, I noticed you logged into this database and you know, you did this dump. Like, is there, you know, everything okay? Or is this, you know, what accounts is associated with? And then that person looks at, you know, kind of gives you the, what are you talking about? And as soon as that happens, yeah, hit the alarm button, because you're absolutely right. You know, something is wrong at that point. And I think, you know, I think another piece, a point, Tim, that I just want to underline with this, because you did a great job of explaining how that works and that it is stoppable, is also this notion of, you know, they come in and they're Jason Bourne, or they're, you know, James Bond with a laser watch, or, you know, they got Stuxnet. And it's not always, right? Sometimes they're just like the things you talked about. PowerShell is embedded in the environment. Microsoft RDP comes with Windows. It's not always the ingredients per se that are sophisticated. And the analogy I use here is like a cooking one, right? Good chefs can use the cheapest ingredients and make a delicious meal, because it's salt and it's pepper and it's a protein and it's some vegetables and it's, you know, heat being added at the right time to sear the meat or do whatever, right? The point is, it's not about the ingredients, it's about the recipe, and it's about the chef's ability to understand how all those pieces play together to create that delicious meal. And it's the same thing with the criminals. It's about the campaign. It's the way they put all those elements together. And maybe they're just using, you know, good old commodity malware to collect credentials, or a pretty simple, you know, realistic looking phishing lure to get you to click on something to download a doc. But it's how they work all that stuff together. That's the magic. And it's a good news, bad news thing in my mind, because, you know, okay, bad news is it is sophisticated. But the good news is there's lots of touches. There's lots of little stops along the way where they, you know, rattle a window, or there's concurrent logins or a failed login attempt, or as you said, right, odd behavior, wrong time of day, bandwidth spikes. It doesn't match the activity of that function, right? Why is someone in marketing trying to access a financial database, or, you know, transfer files? Those kind of things, it gives you those chances to catch them. Like I said, those maybe they're inferential, they're not obvious, but they're there. And that's where I think we got to get out of this sort of fatalistic or defeatist mindset of, you know, if China comes calling, or if, you know, DarkSid or, you know, Sodninsky or somebody shows up, it's all over, because, you know, these guys are, you know, they're heavyweights and we're not. It's simply not true, right? A lot of basic defenses can at least slow them down or make their presence known.
That's correct, Mark. You're exactly right. It's a scary problem, but you really need to talk to experts in the industry to figure that out. And, you know, just like we're talking today, you know, we're both industry experts and vendors as well. But, you know, there's lots of folks out there that are going to teach you different ways you can do this. But, you know, there are certain things that you absolutely need to monitor, and we've discussed them already. So it's not unstoppable, Hillary.
Well, that's great news. Giving our audience hope.
That's nice to have.
Yeah, it is. And so I guess with all of that, I feel like we've kind of, you know, touched upon what I'm going to ask, but to summarize it at the end of the episode, you know, Mark, how do we move? And then Tim, I'd love to hear from you too, but how do we move forward? What are some trends you think are helpful that are happening right now? And what do you see as the future of ransomware?
Yeah. So, you know, I think do the basics, right? Passwords, multi-factor authentication, you know, controlled, encrypted access, least privilege, segmentation, right? Fundamentals there. If, like I said, if they don't stop the criminals outright, at least what they do is they mean they've got to go through some hurdles that give you that opportunity to detect their presence and to take action before it becomes business disrupting. I think that means we also need to shift to the executive mindset, right? So, in fact, this is what I'm seeing a lot of now. Companies aren't just asking about the technicals. Well, what forensics do you guys see? And how do you stop this stuff? Now they're shifting to, well, you're going to tell me if I should pay a ransom if things get bad, or they're going to tell me when I should call law enforcement or notify my insurer. And short answer is no, I can't do that for you. I can arm you with the information to make an informed decision. Right. But I think that's where we're kind of shifting. That's a good thing. But on the bad guy side, you know, we're not out of the woods, and I think it's going to get worse, right? I think that model of vendor IT infrastructure types of attacks, like, you know, against Microsoft and Kaseya and SolarWinds, the one that worries me is when they go after an industry-specific one. So they go after a SCADA control company in manufacturing, or document management and legal, or healthcare records in medical, where they take one of them down, and it's not this sort of cross-industry smattering of disruption, but it wipes out a sector, right? It shuts down, you know, all healthcare in a region for a period of time. That's terrifying. And that one keeps me up at night. And I think, you know, Tim hit on the personal side. But I think as we have these, you know, debates about should ransom payments be illegal, because, you know, frankly, extortion fees and bribes are illegal, so why not this one? Or should insurers limit coverage, or should government limit coverage? As we have those talks, I worry about a brinkmanship scenario where the criminals go, well, you know what, let's see if you can stick to your guns. I'm going to shut down a pipeline, and I have zero intent of ever allowing it to recover. I don't want money. Right. What I want to do is hurt you. And I want you to understand the stakes are a lot higher. And let's see if you're, you know, is this bravado? Is this, you know, political saber rattling? Or do you really have the fortitude to go through with, you know, watching, you know, frankly, the bodies get chucked out of the bank until you give me my fast car and my helicopter full of cash so I can get away? And, you know, that kind of thing worries me, because I think we're, you know, that could be where we head. So, you know, like I said, we want to keep it below the boil here, and we want to get a handle on it. But I think some tough choices are coming in probably the next 6 to 12 months.
Excellent. And Tim, anything else you'd like listeners to think about, especially our audience of CISOs, security leaders, and other decision makers?
Well, I think, you know, if you're an organization of CISOs, you just simply have to put this at the top of your agenda of things to talk about. Like, there are, you know, we've talked about them today. They're common factors. And, you know, you just need to know what you need to be monitoring. And then we need to pass that information on to every organization. When I was at NSA, I worked on a defensive government group of, you know, a bunch of organizations, including private organizations like Microsoft. I think this is going to be an industry-wide offensive that we are going to have to get together. We're going to have to work together. We're going to have to give each other those indicators of compromise to look for so that we can detect these attacks. And then we're going to have to go after them as a group. I remember, I'm trying to think of the organization, but it was an organization that was made up of both government and Microsoft and, you know, a couple of other large organizations like that. And they literally, with the help of Department of Justice, took down a site that was, you know, a dangerous site. And so I think we're going to see more and more of that. Eventually, I'd love to see the government actually step in, because these criminals are often using a nation state network. I'd like to see us then have the government go after that network and bring it down. I think they did some of that with Colonial Pipeline. Is that what you understand, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. Right. I think Colonial Pipeline is an interesting case study, right? Because one, you know, some of the funds were recovered, which is not typical in a ransomware attack.
No.
It's not like a wire transfer where, you know, through the SWIFT network, there's stops and, you know, opportunities to claw back. That clearly is a different scenario. But I think that's it, right? It's that kind of intervention that says, you know what, this is kind of war. This is war. Let me not even coddle that, right? It is. And so you are attacking us. And you know what? There are casualties here. And that's something I've talked about before, is in the kind of the conflict that we face now, it's almost like, you know, in the good old days of war, there were combatants and civilians or non-combatants. And, you know, sometimes civilians got hurt or harmed, and that was considered collateral damage. But now, everyday businesses, there is no distinguishing between combatant and non-combatant. There is no distinguishing between collateral damage and damage. It's just damage. And they're going after all these businesses. So I think we need to look at it like that. And if you look at it through that lens and suddenly go, holy cow, man, these are casualties, that's a time to step in, because, you know, we wouldn't allow that if it were physical. We wouldn't allow, you know, arbitrary bombing of a city and killing civilians or them being shot. We would stand up and we would defend ourselves against that. And I think we need to do that in the cyber world, because that's exactly what happens day in and day out.
I agree 100%, Mark.
Fantastic. Well, I'm not an expert, but I also agree. So we are all aligned. but no, seriously, this has been a really great conversation. And thank you, Tim, for coming on and sharing your expertise. You've been an excellent guest. And Mark, as always, thank you so much. I think this episode is really important for our listeners. So I really appreciate you both taking the time. And I've just really enjoyed listening to you both.
Thank you so much, Hillary. And Mark, thank you for both you and Hillary for inviting me on. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully it's going to be very helpful to somebody to really figure out what they need to focus on.
Oh, definitely. Always glad to get your expertise, Tim. And looking forward to doing this again soon.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. The Managing Cyber Risk podcast series is brought to you by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. eSentire's mission is to hunt, investigate, and stop cyber threats before they become business-disrupting events. Combining cutting-edge machine learning XDR platform technology, 24/7 threat hunting, and proven security operations leadership, eSentire mitigates business risk and enables security at scale for over 1,000 organizations globally. To learn more about our sponsor, visit eSentire.com.